If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition this Saturday morning. Me, Justine Moss. A very good morning to you. Crossing now to Simon Marks, our U.S. Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C. Good morning, Simon.
Hello, Justine.
Thanks so much for joining us here once again and keeping us updated. Lots to talk about today as usual. Let's start off with U.S. employers adding 194,000 jobs in September. It is a weak showing. People did avoid things like restaurants and travel, of course, amid another coronavirus surge.
Yeah, I mean, this was a real surprise because the markets were anticipating numbers closer to the 500,000 range in terms of numbers of new jobs being created in September. And in the event, the number was only 194,000. If you actually take a look online, you'll find video clips of some of the business channels here where the hosts are clearly very surprised by the numbers as they were published by the Department of Labor on Friday morning. President Biden, perhaps rather bravely, took to the briefing room at the White House to tell reporters that this was all still good news because the nation's unemployment rate had fallen to 4.8%. But nonetheless, there is, I think, now growing concern and a growing body of evidence to suggest that there are some real structural issues in this labor market in the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic. Specific among them, the disappearance of around 3 million people from the marketplace of people out there that are actively looking for work. And it seems pretty evident that while there are key sectors, the hospitality sector particularly, the restaurant sector, and of course the travel industry, that are not creating jobs as rapidly as analysts had anticipated, it also seems pretty evident that there are lots of Americans who have used the pandemic as a punctuation mark in terms of their careers, in some cases simply choosing to retire early, get out of the labor market. In other cases, they're looking for jobs that are not full-time, occasional work. And so this is one of the reasons why we're still seeing shortages of staff in many key sectors. So I think no question that this is worrying for a Biden administration that this week saw the president's approval rating crater to a record low of 38% in the Quinnipiac University poll. And that, by the way, is a poll that Republicans often complain is soft on Democrats. Joe Biden's rating in that poll dropping another 4 points over 3 weeks, now down below the average approval rating that Donald Trump enjoyed during his presidency. The Trump average approval rating was 41%, Joe Biden now at 38%, and most worryingly for the White House, a majority of Americans not only saying to that poll that they don't believe that Joe Biden is competent in government or an effective leader, but a majority of Americans also telling those pollsters that they do not believe that they can have confidence in President Biden's stewardship of the economy. So there's no question that this was another knock for the White House. Next week, of course, it's possible that there will be fresh data that turns things around a little bit. But this definitely was not the scale of job creation that the administration or the markets were hoping to see.
But despite that jobs report, stocks did cling to some weekly gains, finished that volatile week with some strong gains.
Yes, although on the day, all the indices here were down. The Dow Jones Industrial Average ended the day just marginally down, 0.03% in value. The S&P 500 down just 0.19% in value, and the Nasdaq down about half a percentage point in value. There are other concerns that have been weighing on the markets, including fresh evidence of supply chain problems here in the United States and, of course, elsewhere. Still very, very difficult to find supplies, for example, in the construction industry, often a bellwether of economic recovery. I think buoying the markets a little bit was the announcement by the OECD in Paris that 136 separate countries now are backing that global minimum corporate tax of 15%, which on the one hand may not be great news for some multinationals that have been exploiting tax loopholes, but on the other hand is potentially good news for revenues around the world, government revenues around the world, because it's got the capacity to generate billions of dollars in additional tax payments that, of course, so many governments and so many jurisdictions badly need. Next week, the markets are going to be looking at consumer confidence numbers. Those are going to be key in the aftermath of this jobs report. And also we head back into earnings season with some of the major banks publishing their quarterly earnings. And again, I think the markets will be keeping a very close eye on all of that, because every gauge of where things are heading here with regard to an economic recovery from the pandemic are going to be very keenly observed.
Simon, let's talk about some other news this week about the US Senate voting 50-48 to temporarily raise the nation's debt limit by $480 billion. Mind-boggling figure there. Now, it did avoid a historic default. Some experts say that would have totally sort of crippled and devastated the economy.
Yeah, not just the American economy, but potentially it would have provoked global fiscal instability and crisis, because the United States sees itself and absolutely is the fiscal rock on which the rest of the world depends. I mean, we are in a pretty extraordinary political position here. Last week, you'll remember that at the 11th hour, Congress managed to avert a government shutdown. This week, they've averted the possibility of the United States in the middle of the month defaulting on its borrowing. But in both cases, all they've managed to do is kick the can down the road to December. So I can tell you that members of the reporting fraternity here are already dreading Christmas, because there's an enormous possibility of a cascading set of deadlines as we get towards the end of the year. With politics here so polarized now between President Biden and his Republican opponents that, you know, it becomes a matter of legislative triumph when they vote to keep the government open or to avoid defaulting on America's debts. The week was dominated by President Biden insisting that the Republicans were playing Russian roulette with the nation's finances by indicating that if the Democrats wanted to raise the debt ceiling, they needed to do it by themselves because the Republicans weren't going to join in that endeavor. It was Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in Congress, who ended up blinking and caving in and saying to the Democrats, OK, well, we'll let you on this occasion pass a stopgap measure with a simple majority. But that doesn't resolve the long-term issue. And that's before we get to those other huge spending bills that are still in the in-tray for Congress, the infrastructure bill, President Biden's, as it was initially proposed, $3.5 trillion public expenditure bill. So all of these things are intertwined. And the fact that once again, they've gone to the mat over something as basic as whether the United States is going to continue servicing debts, not on new public expenditure, but on all the old stuff that has been run up by Democrat presidents and Republican presidents alike for decades, is pretty extraordinary that you have to get to the 11th hour and 59th minute in order to avoid sparking a global fiscal crisis. But let's accentuate the positive. At least they've done it through until December.
Yes, exactly. You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition this Saturday morning with me, Justine Moss, speaking with Simon Marks, our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C. Simon, let's just switch gears here. And a story that really just came to light this week, even though it happened last weekend, US nuclear submarine sustaining damage, some crew members injured when it struck an object while operating at depth in the South China Sea. US Navy only confirming this week, and China has demanded more information.
Yeah, and some of the information China is demanding is whether there was any kind of nuclear leak from this submarine. This is the USS Connecticut. It's a Navy Seawolf class submarine, and it's understood that it was operating on the seabed of the South China Sea. There have been some suggestions that perhaps what it collided with was the seabed, although the U.S. Navy has specifically described this as a collision with an object. And the Navy Times here, which is the newspaper for the U.S. Navy, says that their sources suggest that it wasn't another vessel and wasn't the seabed itself with which this submarine collided. There are some reports here, speculation, that perhaps it hit a sunken ship in the South China Sea. Perhaps it hit a shipping container that had fallen from another vessel. Or perhaps there's something down there that simply doesn't show up on the naval charts that, of course, the submarine navigators use as these craft make their way through these waters. But this has become another irritant in terms of the US relationship with China. In a week in which, more broadly, there appeared to have been a bit of a breakthrough, that meeting between National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan and top Chinese diplomat Yang Jiechi in Zurich, that led to an agreement in principle for a virtual summit to be held between President Xi and President Biden before the end of the year. But this is an irritant because the Chinese say the United States ought to be transparent about what exactly took place, not least because they are expressing concerns about the impact of what might have taken place when that collision occurred. So the U.S. officials said earlier in the week that the submarine was limping back to port, that there were no serious injuries on board, but it certainly still appears to remain a pretty substantial mission. The assumption here is that the submarine and its crew were engaged in some kind of covert surveillance mission, which is why we're not getting very much information about what they were doing down there.
Simon, let's just finish off with President Joe Biden restoring the boundaries of three American nature reserves. They're known as national monuments. They were reduced in size by former President Donald Trump to allow a commercial activity. But now Mr. Biden is restoring those boundaries.
Two of them are in Utah. The Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante monuments, which between them comprise more than 3.2 million acres, vast, vast tracts of land. And then there is an offshore area off the New England coast that under an order that President Trump issued was suddenly stripped of its protections and allowed to be used for commercial fishing. In the case of Bear's Ears and the Grand Staircase Escalante monuments, the change meant that companies that wanted to operate drilling, for example, in those parts of Utah could start considering business projects there. Joe Biden, in overturning those moves by President Trump today, described this as the easiest decision he has yet had to make as president. Remember that there have been all sorts of things that President Trump did that Joe Biden has been overturning. But he said today that these areas exhibit unique biodiversity. He was talking about the two sites in Utah as being places of healing, places of reverence, and a sacred homeland to generations of native peoples. This move is not without controversy, particularly in Utah, where Senator Mitt Romney, remember, a former presidential candidate for the Republicans and now a Republican senator representing the state, accusing President Biden of failing to build consensus and simply using these Utah monuments as what he called a political football between administrations. He is favoring a permanent solution rather than, you know, this kind of ping pong match where one president does one thing and then another president overturns it. And then who knows, maybe there'll be a Republican president in 2024 and he'll reverse what Joe Biden has done. Nonetheless, for the Native American community in Utah, particularly, this a very welcome move. And remember that with regard to the relationship with Native American communities, President Biden has already done something that no other president has done, which is to put the Department of the Interior, which is the government department responsible for all of these monuments and federally protected lands, it's now led by a woman of Native American descent for the very first time. So this further indication that the balance in that relationship between the federal government and Native communities is beginning to shift.
Simon, thank you so much for talking to us here once again in Singapore and keeping us updated.
Thanks, Justine. Talk to you soon.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.